Montreal back to center. Now up 2-0, 16-34 to play in the first. Here come the Jackets. Cylinder far side shot kicked out. Caden Primo takes one away from Texier off the near side with a monster glove stop. And he keeps it 2-0 in the early going.
It just means so much, all the support. And there's truly no words to describe it.
Did you ever think you'd see the night where they're chanting your name like that over and over again?
It's something you dream about.
Big night last night for Caden Primo. Welcome back into Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. I am John Still with Andy Bennett and Lucas Scotch. I was going to say Mitch is hopefully back tomorrow, but instead I said Lucas Scotch. No, it's Lucas Scott. You should change your name to Lucas Scotch, though. It's a pretty good name. Before we get into what happened with the Montreal Canadiens last night, as always, I love when nonsense takes hold. And Gord Miller decided to provide the nonsense today on Twitter as Gord, about a half an hour ago, tweeting out that his crew for the game, I believe in and around Philadelphia, said that they got into an argument about oatmeal with raisin cookies. Why even bother? And then Gord, I think, with a very terrific and right take, saying oatmeal raisin cookies are fantastic. I agree with Gord on this one. Andy Bennett, Lucas Scott, we'll get your takes in just a moment. Gord, how big of a party foul was that, the hatred of the oatmeal cookie?
Well, I'm embarrassed to be traveling with these guys. Two of them are in the car with me right now. I mean, it's just hard to find people that have, taste and quality. It's very difficult. So, but I'm happy if they want to leave the oatmeal raisin to me, because I think oatmeal raisin cookies are fantastic.
As do I, and I've got into these. Back and forth with people before. I love them, Andy. You clearly vehemently disagree.
There is nothing more disappointing than seeing a cookie from afar and thinking it is a chocolate chip cookie and then showing up and it being an oatmeal raisin.
So
like,
to me,
that is disappointment.
Okay, so wait,
I don't need in
so
my life.
So to you, it's the disappointment of seeing some kind of speck in the cookie and assuming that it is a chocolate chip and then finding out that it is a raisin. I, on the other hand, would go out of my way to search out an oatmeal raisin cookie.
No, that's just sad.
Or a raisin bran muffin.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm a big raisin person, so I would love to disagree with you, Andy, but... Okay, so your crew that you're with at the moment, is this the same problem as Andy? Do they just find raisins or oatmeal largely disgusting? Like, where is this coming from?
I don't know. I didn't ask them. I'm so I'm so disgusted with them right now. I can't even start. It's just,
a cookie though is like a treat. It's sweet. It's like a cookie shouldn't be like something that keeps you regular.
Raisins are fantastic.
Keeps you right. Why are you? Okay, we're gonna move on, Andy. I don't know what
Thank
the hell.
God.
I don't know what the hell that was, but keeps you regular. Gord, last night at the Bell Center. Look, the Canadians they just weren't very good. They win by a score of 3-0 because the Columbus Blue Jackets didn't start the game particularly well. I'm sure Pascal Vaisan had some spirited things to say to them after he was forced to pull Elvis Merzlikins. But the story of the game was game one. After the three-goalie system is taken care of by Kent Hughes at the deadline, and Caden Primo puts on a show at the Bell Center. Just a good vibes moment for a goaltender that I think has been a little bit put through the ringer this year with that situation.
Well, I think, and I don't know that one is related to the other, but certainly his performance makes it much easier to digest. And look, everyone says the right thing, and no one wants to rock the boat, but no goaltender likes the idea of having three on the roster at once. It's a nightmare of practice. It's a nightmare for playing games. It's just you have no rhythm. It's just very difficult. And you try to get along with the other guys. You want to be a good teammate, but it just doesn't work. And whenever it can be avoided, and there's lots of reasons teams carry three. They don't want to lose a guy on waivers, whatever you want to say, but ideally you'd like to have two. And it works way better for them. So I don't know if Caden Primo played great because now they're down to two, but the fact that he played great makes it a lot easier to handle the fact that they only have two.
I think he just looks more confident than that. I mean, I couldn't really tell you what he's doing. I mean, I don't know the goalie terminology and all that, but I mean, he just looks more confident than that, and he's making a lot of big saves at timely moments in the game. I was telling these guys, like, could have been a 3-3 game in the first period, and he kept them all out of the net, obviously. And I mean, that's what you need out of your goalie sometimes. Sometimes your team's not playing the greatest in front of them, and stand on their head. So, I mean, this is definitely he's definitely a huge part of this win tonight. So.
There's Caden Gooley post-game, who kind of went through the wars. The Blue Jackets, I thought, after a very poor start, they really kind of turned it on in the second and the third periods. But we were talking about this a little bit earlier in the week, Gord, in terms of the three-goalie system. Not only does it necessarily hurt the goaltenders in terms of making it very difficult for the goaltending coaches, kind of everyone who's around that position, but just from an evaluation standpoint, I think that it makes it a little bit of a lost season if you're Kent Hughes and the rest of the team, in that, you know, do you believe that Caden Primo can walk into the NHL next year and absolutely back up Sam Montembeau? Are you convinced that Sam Montembeau can handle 40 games in a season? I mean, these are all kind of questions that have been pushed to next season, because this three-goalie system has kind of made it so that none of us really have any kind of real idea about it.
Well, yeah, and I think even a larger sense, you know, like Nashville's got Yaroslav Askarov, who was a first-round draft pick a couple of years ago. What's better for him, backing up in the NHL or playing in the American League? Like, the issue for teams with goaltending is sometimes you'll see a goalie play in the ECHL for a while. Well, that's not because he's bad, but because a team would rather have their guy playing in the ECHL than backing up in the American League. You know, it's the position where only one guy can play at a time. And so managing your goaltending is one of the most difficult things that organizations have to do. And then it's so unpredictable. How can you know from one year to the next who's going to be good and who isn't? I mean, it seems to land differently every year. So, but I would say that for the Canadians, you know, they'd like to get an idea of what Primo can do. And now they will in the last quarter of the season here. They will get an idea now of, you know, Primo is going to be thrown into the deep end of the pool. He's going to play against some good teams. He's going to get more starts. And, you get worn down. And the other measure of a goaltender is, you know, if you have a bad start, you might have to go back out. You know, or if you're the backup, you might play really well and then not see the net again for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Did you have not necessarily high hopes for Columbus, but did you, to me, they're in a very similar spot to Anaheim, in that I expected them to just not necessarily take a step into the playoffs, but at least take a step from outside of the bottom five. And they played hard last night. Again, I got to give Pascal Vaisseau a lot of credit after a very difficult start. But the amount of money that they spend in free agents, the talented players they have out there, it does seem shocking to me that this has been one of the worst teams in the National Hockey League all year long.
Well, their goaltending's been no good. Patrick Laine has been out for much of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's a star player they had. You know, the issue for Columbus is, like a lot of teams, is that they've finished low down. They've had some high draft picks. They don't have a lot of stars. You know, you need young stars. You need guys you can build around, and they don't necessarily have those, and that's a problem. And, you know, you can finish down near the bottom of the standings a lot. Doesn't guarantee you're going to get better right away. And ask the Buffalo Sabres, right? I mean, how many years have they been in the wilderness? Columbus had that big year where they upset Tampa in 2019. But aside from that, it's been a lot of high draft picks that haven't netted them star players. I mean, Zach Werenski's probably a star. But beyond that, they don't really have one. And for a bunch of reasons. And I would say to Montreal fans, you know, it's a cautionary tale. But just because you're drafting high a lot doesn't mean you're going to get those superstar players that are going to be difference makers. And I think that's what Anaheim has. Anaheim has what look like superstar players. I would say that Carlson is a superstar potential player. People think he might be a right-handed Matt Sundin. So, you know, that's what you need to get in the draft.
It's odd, though, because, I remember Jarmo Kekalainen looking happier than I've ever really seen a Finnish person look yesterday, or last year, excuse me, when he was able to go up there and pick Adam Fantilli. So they get some young talent at the top of the draft, but then the one that seems odd to me is the Goudreau signing. It was universally kind of lauded, universally praised, as you're able to get the cream of the crop in free agency, and it just has not worked out for him for a myriad of reasons.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Johnny Gaudreau didn't take the best offer. He took the best offer from an American-based team, right? Because he left money on the table. He could have stayed in Calgary.
Right.
So I would say that it was an odd move. you know, you're trying to kickstart the market. The team sign free agents for a bunch of reasons. One of them is, you know, you're trying to sell tickets. You're trying to get people excited about your team. But at the end of the day, free agency is not the ticket. If you're a team that's missed the playoffs twice in the last 3 years, you should not be in the free agent market. Free agency is for teams that are putting the finishing touches on their roster, not trying to build one, because you can't build your free agency.
Oh, boy, are you in some traffic over there?
Yeah, Philadelphia, man. I'm in downtown Philly, baby. Every man for himself.
I haven't heard anyone screaming or cussing at you yet, so I assume that's just around the corner. It's Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. I'm John Still with Andy Bennett and Luca Scott in conversation with TSN's Gord Miller. Gord, you've seen you've called a lot of Senators games throughout the year. They get a 2-1 victory over the Penguins, but boy, oh boy, there hasn't been a more strange stat to me this entire season than the Senators not beating a Western Conference team. How is that even possible?
They haven't won a game outside their
outside time zone. Exactly.
They've beaten the Western Conference teams at home, but they haven't won outside their time zone. Amazing. And again, their goaltending's been terrible. And I think the other thing is that young teams tend to get exposed in terms of matchups on the road, and it looks like they get exposed more in the Western Conference than do anywhere else.
How concerning is that third shoulder surgery for Josh Norris?
That's a tough one. Same shoulder, so it's very concerning because it just, you know, it's one of those things that there's scar tissue. You know, surgery can alleviate some issues, but there's very few operations you can have where you're better afterwards. I would say in some cases like a knee replacement or a hip replacement, but that's for older people. I mean, you know, when you've had your shoulder operated on three times, it's probably not going to be as good as it was before the first operation. That's just a fact. So, look, I hope it cleans it up. I hope he's fine. But mentally, it's got to be difficult to get back out there in a contact sport with no out of bounds and try to get back and play full speed.
Also last night, this one in Chicago, yes, Connor Bedard had 5 points, but the most important part of the game was this.
Getting after it with Mason McTavish. It's a veteran and a young player in McTavish.
And the youngster McTavish is there, and so is Ratko Gudas. And Entwistle's got to be, you got to be careful. You got to know who you're grabbing right there. And there, yep, let's see what I mean. That wasn't going to stop. That was not going to stop. And Mackenzie Entwistle's ready for it.
And Gudas has just landed one on Mackenzie Entwistle, who's trying to protect himself. And Peter Mrazek stepping in to try and break things up with Gudas.
And here comes Gibson. Let's see what we got here. Let's see what we got.
Reese Johnson battling Pavel Minyakov right now. And Gibson is trying to grab at Mrazek.
Body's on the ice down there. You got to be careful of the skate blades right there. Minyakov, man, did he throw a roundhouse right? That was a surprising one there. Gibson wants to grab the goalie. He's telling the referee, let's go.
Gord, you know the inner workings of the NHL better than most. Why are there no more? Why are the referees not allowing goalies to fight anymore?
Well, I think because, you know, if a goalie gets into a fight with a forward or a defenseman, you know, I mean, it's one thing if Gibson were to fight Mrazek, but there are other players involved. You're trying to protect the players. And the last thing you want to see, even with two teams out of the playoffs, is a goalie break his hand, get his nose broken, jaw broken, whatever. I mean, it's pretty senseless for goalies to fight. And it's turning into kind of a macho thing for them. It's turning into kind of a macho thing for them. But it's a pretty senseless thing to do. So I think that's why they do it.
Did you like goalie fights back in the day or no?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, sure, I was there the night Patrick Waugh and Chris Osgood fought.
No, oh, one of the greats.
You know, I mean, I don't know what the point of it is. I mean, I guess what I would say about this, what I'd say about fighting is this. If you like fighting, just say you like it. But don't say it regulates the temperature of the game. Don't say it keeps sticks down. Don't say it protects star players, because it doesn't. Just say you like it. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. But don't give it some higher purpose that it doesn't have.
I think it's more players that give it a higher purpose, no?
Yeah, some do, yeah. I mean, some players say they feel safer with a tough guy on their lineup. And the problem with that is, you know, a lot of the incidents, like We just saw Matt Rempe, a tough guy who's supposed to, you know, police things. He just got suspended for a game for elbowing a guy in the head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like it's like they're out there to police the game while the cops are robbing the banks. They're committing all the crimes.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I think that it's an emotional thing. It's hard to argue facts when people argue emotion. And so, you know, I knew a guy who was a New York City police officer. His job was, if you went to buy a handgun in New York, you had to wait 5 days and he'd be counseled by a police officer about the dangers of it. And he was one of those guys. So he would go to people and say, if you keep a loaded gun in your house, it's 10 times more likely to be used on you or a member of your family than it is an intruder. And even when presented with those stats, people would say, yeah, I just feel safer having a gun in the house. Well, you know, you're arguing emotion against facts. So, you know, the problem with fighting is it has long-term effects. People do get badly hurt doing it, and there's lots and there's thousands of examples of players getting badly hurt doing it. But people like it. So, you know, my concern would be, you know, and I've broadcast some fights that ended really badly with guys being taken off the ice on a stretcher and everything else. My concern is someone getting really badly hurt. I mean, like, either badly disabled or, God forbid, killed. And then you're going to have parliamentary hearings and congressional hearings in the U.S., and then all these documents that come out about all the warnings they've had about the dangers of it, because you can't sit there and cheer for fights and do a tail of the tape and ring a bell in the arena, and then when a guy gets hurt, say, oh, you hate to see that. No, you don't. You like to see that. That's what you came to see. So, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Gord, you mentioned Rempe, and I'm wondering, do you think the NHL got it right with the 4 games? And when you look at, like, a similar elbow to the head with Gallagher getting 5, Rempe getting 4, I just feel like it's another situation where the NHL is, like, there's so much gray area, and you just don't know what things are worth. Why do they have such a hard time just being consistent?
Well, because no matter what you do, people are going to complain about it, right? Because there's fans involved. So right away, a Montreal fan's going to say, that's no fair. A Ranger fan's going to think Rempe got too much. But I would say that, you know, intent looks like part of it. There appeared to be more intent on Gallagher's part. Like, he appeared to target the guy, whereas Rempe appeared a little more reactive, but he's clearly going for his head. So, yeah, I think the suspension's right.
Do you think there... From seeing what he's been able to do out there, like, we kind of made I think it was Mike Johnson we were talking to, and Mike made the point that I think the only other rookie that we've spoken about as much this season than Matt Rempe is Connor Bedard, where, you know, all of a sudden it's like Rempe mania that's just kind of gripped the National Hockey League. Like, when you see the amount of, I don't want to say social media hits, but the amount that people have kind of taken an interest in this young man, and the amount that he's able to bring to the ice that's outside of actually playing hockey. Just what do you think that says about fans and their interest in the game?
The world we live in, right? My concern for Rempe is he fights a lot. He doesn't look to me like he's very good at it. And I actually talked to a couple of pro scouts who are ex-heavyweights who both said the same thing. Like, he leaves himself wide open. And there is a science and art to hockey fighting. It's not like fighting, you know, in flat shoes, like in shoes. It's on skates. It's a different animal, and you have to protect yourself. And he doesn't seem to, and he seems to leave himself open to some really punishing shots. And he's been beaten up a couple of times. He got beat up a couple of times in junior. Zach Ostapchuk, who made his NHL debut last night for Ottawa, filled him in a junior game one night. So my concern is that he seems to like to fight, but he might not be very good at it. And that can be a problem.
And finally, Gordo, last night on the ice.
Wow. Verhaeghe off the draw. Controls along the boards. Montour gathers it in out of his skates. Here's Verhaeghe across. Barkov puts it in front. Score! Barkov sets up Tkachuk! And the Panthers have 4 in a row. It is 4-3 Florida.
In Dallas, no less. I mean, that one looked like it was going to be a – that's a – I think that's going to be the Stanley Cup final. Personally, that's just my opinion. I've been big on the Stars, excuse me, for a couple of months now. Do you have, with a month to go until the playoffs, do you have teams that you think are more likely than not kind of favorites in the East and the West?
Well, Florida for sure. I mean, the mark of a good team is when you win games you shouldn't, and that was one last night. The winner of the Dallas and Colorado could play each other in the first round. So imagine that. I would say the winner of that series has a good chance. How about if Vancouver, having its best season in franchise history, finishes first and plays Vegas in the first round of the playoffs? How would that be?
That would be tough, like, for Vancouver.
I mean, yeah, like, it's wild. I mean, Mitch and I make this bet every year. He picks a team and I take the field. And I think he stopped making the bet because I win every year. You know, like, it's a bad bet because, I mean, I get 15 teams, he gets one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, and the one year that the President's Trophy winner won the cup, he didn't bet.
Have you received even one dinner yet, Gord?
Well, I got one. He owes me another one. I'm coming to Montreal next week, so I might try to lure him out for dinner next week and see if we can. He's not feeling well again, though, so maybe. But we've had three dinners at Moishe's.
Okay.
On my wagering wins, I like to say I'm the leading Montreal.
This could be like a Seinfeld thing where you guys go out for soup. And Mitchell say, that's the dinner. That's the dinner, is him taking you out for soup because unfortunately he's not feeling well. But
Moishe's is back, right? Isn't that? Are we hearing this properly? It is back?
It is back, yes.
So does owe me one.
Some debate as to whether or not it's the same Moishe's, however. So.
We'll let Mitch fill you in on that one.
He has thoughts on
exactly.
this.
He's got thoughts. He's got big time thoughts.
There aren't enough hours in the day to worry about all the stuff that Mitch Melnick worries about.
Reach.
Thank you, Gord. Have yourself a good one. We'll do it all again next Wednesday.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.